Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
President Bush continues to not let facts get in the way of his ideology.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Above Politics Show. I am Justin Case.
And I'm Martin Bain. Today we are back discussing, among other things, the recent Democratic U.S. presidential primaries.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, I stayed up all night with too much soda and too much popcorn, but I've got the results.
But I think we'll come back to that later on in the show. How did our listeners do with your Star Trek-based question last week? Is anyone beaming with the answer? Who was enterprising enough?
Okay, all right, please, enough. I beg for mercy. I bow to your superior knowledge of all things Trek. Yeah, we did actually get somebody came through. Expert 11 was Johnny on the spot with the answer. My trivia question last week was, what is the Picard maneuver? And Expert 11 was the first to answer that the Picard maneuver is a specific starship tactical maneuver, and I don't want to put anybody asleep, so I'm not going to describe it, but he was the first one with the first of two acceptable answers. I would like to mention that ATS member Tuning Spork wandered in a while later to give the second answer, and this is the one I was really looking for, and it tells me just how much of a hardcore Trekker that Tuning Spork really is, because the Picard maneuver also happens to be that thing that Patrick Stewart does when he's playing that character. Every time he stands up, he grabs the corners of his tunic and gives it a little pull to take the wrinkles out. And from what I understand, among Star Trek fans, one of their favorite drinking games involves having a few shot glasses and, you know, whatever is your favorite poison. And in any given Star Trek Next Gen episode, anytime Picard does his Picard maneuver, then everybody's supposed to drink, and supposedly by the end of any second season episode, the average Trekkie is just hammered by the time they roll the end credits.
Cool, and I think I must now bow to your knowledge, because I wasn't aware of that game. Golly, I'll have to watch some of The Next Generation, and I think I'll just try it with a cup of tea first and have a sip every time just to see what it feels like.
Hey, you know, look, I'm all for drinking games. Once upon a time, I was the master of many, but I've got to warn you now, steer clear of Dave. He's on this kick with this new game he's created, you know, the one he calls, lovingly calls, Butt Darts.
Yes, and I suppose if we ever get to Dallas, he's probably going to challenge us.
Well, you know, I never actually thought I'd have a good reason to not go to Dallas, but there you go.
I'm sure JFK wished he hadn't gone to Dallas, but hey, that's probably scraping the barrel on sort of seedy jokes a little bit.
Yeah, at the very least.
If you're going to sink, you might as well sink properly.
All right, then. As long as you're going down with the ship, please tell us, what is your trivia challenge for this week?
Golly. Well, hopefully one day we might stump somebody with these questions. So, as usual, 500 applause points. And my question is, which was the last country to join Comic-Con? The last country to join Comic-Con.
Okay, now that is not Comic-Con, for those of you Trekkies out there who might be listening to us. That's an entirely separate thing. Now, just in case you don't know, Martin, Comic-Con is a big comic book convention that gets held here in the States, down in California, every year, every other year, something.
Bother. We could have had people for hours trying to think what the answer was to that.
Oh, so I've deprived you of some fun. Well, I guess I owe you one then.
Oh. I did actually Google this, so I was aware there was something around a comic festival. But guess what? We're going to be generous today. It's nothing to do with the comic festival, chaps.
Well, hey, speaking of festivals, when we come back from a short break, we'll be talking about the Kentucky and Oregon primaries.
Hey, everyone. Doc Hancock here from the BTS Mix Show. The BTS Mix is a lot of fun, but when I need some serious mental stimulation, I know exactly where to go. our sister shows here at the Above Network LLC. Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous over at the ATS Mix Show tackle a variety of current topics, ranging from hard-hitting events in the news to conspiracy theories to the mysterious world of UFOs. Here you'll find insightful discussions about member posts, member interviews, and exclusive interviews with experts in their fields. To quench my political cravings, I tune into the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case. Martin and Justin make sense out of this crazy political climate by discussing member posts, interviewing members about their stances on the issues, and interviewing noted political figures and authors. For politics, there is nowhere else to turn. So come on over and deny boredom with us at the BTS Mix Show, featuring Spencer Tracy and me, Doc Hancock. Deny ignorance with the ATS Mix Show with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous, and deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case. Be a part of the revolution. It's Above Network, LLC.
And we're back. And if I get this right, Justin, Clinton is still a long way behind Obama, despite a fairly comprehensive win in Kentucky.
Oh, boy, she beat him like a drum in Kentucky, that's for sure. She won 65% to his 30%. While it did narrow the gap in terms of delegates, it didn't change the superdelegate situation. And it did throw some gasoline on the fire when it comes to the matter of the popular vote. The thing that Hillary Clinton is doing now is she's making her case for the presidency based on the popular vote, because, so says she, if you count the vote tallies from Michigan and Florida, that she leads in the popular vote total, and therefore she should be the party's.
But it's not the popular vote that actually elects the president, though, in the U.S., is it? It's basically all the states will then nominate or say who they're actually going to vote for. So you can swing either side of this argument and say that the president of the United States is not actually elected by popular vote, and these I can't remember what the word is to describe these people that actually elect the president.
Well, you're thinking of the Electoral College, and what happens is that in each state there is a formula that is used to determine the total number of delegates who are sent to the Electoral College to cast their votes for the president. Now, typically what has happened in the past, there have been two great debates. There's the school of thought that says that the state-level delegates should acquiesce to whatever the majority popular vote is, and then there's the school of thought that says you vote your party line. That debate has always been with us and probably always will be with us, but the thing that's making everything much more difficult now is this business of the superdelegates. The Democratic Party has more than 2,000 superdelegates, which are made up of every serving Democratic politician at the federal level. This will include state governors. So they have there's a huge body of people who are, the intention is, I think, is for them to be the, like, the party elders. They're supposed to represent the brain trust, but you know, so far, duh, they ain't doing such a good job.
So, theoretically, the rank-and-file members of the Democratic Party could vote for one candidate, and as Hillary is claiming, she could have the popular vote, but the superdelegates could actually say, but I'm not actually interested in how the people have voted, I'm now going to give my vote based on my personal views, and could theoretically give their vote to somebody who was in second place in the competition.
Yes, that is theoretically possible, and the lawyers have said that if this were to happen, that it would technically be legal. And, boy, I can think of nothing that would throw gasoline on the fire more so than this. Imagine the hypothetical scenario of we go to the polls in November, and, as you say, you know, suppose everybody does say Barack Obama, but then the superdelegates turn around and say, I don't think so. I think it's Hillary Clinton instead. The theory goes that there would be riots in the streets, and, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
And we've touched on this almost every time we've spoken about them, and talk about handing the race back to the Republicans. Because I know, you know, you've clearly said, you know, on the show on several occasions that you think the time of the Republicans may be passing and the door may be closed. And something like this is probably just, you know, if you're Senator McLean, you must just be rubbing your hands in glee, actually hoping this happens and that the Democratic Party just goes head to head, you know, and just explodes.
Well, the fragmentation in the Democratic Party is without a doubt the single best asset the Republicans have going for them right now. In spite of John McCain's maverick status, he's still having a hard time pulling together the coalition that he's going to need to beat the Democrats. Now, in my opinion, there are two possible ways this turns out. If Obama does not pick Hillary Clinton for his vice presidential running mate, then McCain's chances of winning the presidency go up dramatically, and then his choice of who he picks for his vice president nominee, that also adds to the mix. So the way I look at it, the victory matchup for the Democrats is an Obama-Clinton ticket. If it's anything but that, then for the Republicans, the victory matchup is a McCain-Huckabee ticket, because Huckabee brings just enough to the table so that the average American conservative will be able to hold their nose and vote for him.
Let's put you on the spot a little bit. You've got the mortgage deeds to your property. Where do you bet on the dream ticket for the Democrats? Do you actually go to some shady character somewhere and say, I'm prepared to bet the deeds to my house on the dream ticket for the Democrats?
If for some insane reason, say perhaps I'd been playing too many Star Trek drinking games, yeah, I would probably be willing to bet the mortgage because, as I've said many times before, when we go to the polls in November, gasoline is $5 a gallon, oil trades at $150 a barrel or more, and because we're getting close to the holiday season, because the troops are still in Iraq and in Afghanistan, that's the triple threat. The average voter is going to have so much negativity on their mind that when they step into the polling place and they put their hand on that lever, they're going to think third term curse. They're going to think, I don't want one more term of Republicans in office because I have not really benefited from the last two. So they will vote Democrat.
So what you're saying is that Hillary Clinton will fight this to the death, because if she doesn't, it hands the opportunity for someone else to be the vice president. So she is typically just going to carry on until the convention. And then, you know, potentially Senator Barack Obama is going to be sort of declared the candidate. And then presumably he's going to come on stage. I just don't see that happening, Justin. I just don't see that happening on the day of the convention. You know, all of a sudden, after all the fighting and the and the arguments, and you know, you've got to think the Democratic convention will probably be a fairly heated and fractured affair. I just don't see sort of Senator Barack Obama coming out and saying, thank you very much, I am the next president of the United States, oh, and by the way, let me introduce you to the next vice president. Hey, Hillary, do you want to hop up on the stage?
Well, actually, the way this process will work, once the convention is convened, the first two or three days will be taken up in procedural matters, and that basically means accepting the credentials of all the state-level delegates and then seating them. Now, while this happens in the proverbial back room with the door locked and closed and locked, then the wheeling and dealing begins. Now, if she stays in the race, she has the potential of going to this convention with enough delegates to force the issue. She will basically tell him, look, if you do not select me as your vice president, I will instruct all of the delegates that I've come with to vote for somebody else. Now, of course, you know, they're not bound. After the first ballot, they can vote anything they want from the second try on, but I can embarrass the living daylights out of you if you don't do that.
And I suspect this is what must have happened, let's face it, not only in the U.S. over many years, but in most democratic countries. There must be a great deal of horse trading quietly in the background to see who's going to be the number one and number two. I mean, we've had all the stories about Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, and them deciding allegedly in a restaurant somewhere in London somewhere, Islington, I think, but I stand to be corrected by our membership, and if I've got it wrong, you know where to post the answers. And they sort of cut a deal to say, you know, Tony Blair would be the Prime Minister for the first couple of terms, and Gordon Brown would, you know, follow in his shoes. You know, he'd resign halfway through a term so that he could then have maybe 2 or 3 years being Prime Minister and be elected again. So, and presumably, will Florida be resolved by then? Will the delegates for Florida actually count? Or is that, I mean, I know there's some legal wranglings going on there, but, you know, that could be another Trump card that Hillary Clinton has.
Oh, I'm sure that's part of why she's still in the race. Now, the Democratic National Committee is due to convene its Rules Committee on May 31st of this year. And as we make this recording, that's less than 2 weeks away. When that committee meets, they'll begin the first stage task of certifying the delegates. And when that happens, lawyers for Hillary Clinton will come to this meeting and they'll make their case for the recognition of the votes and the delegates for Michigan and for Florida. Now, the case for Florida is much more cut and dried. The problem you have with Michigan is that their governor signed an executive order that moved the state's primary, and then it was also the issue is also clouded by the fact that Barack Obama voluntarily took his name off the ballot. Now down in Florida, things went much more smoothly. The legislature debated the issue. Both houses passed a bill on to the governor, and the governor waited for legal challenges to be defeated, and then he signed it into law.
So the interesting thing is whether that – will that then overrule any federal rules or any federal laws?
There is no specific federal law for this because this has never happened before. Now, it's my personal opinion that what the Democrats did here was they didn't just shoot themselves in the foot. They made themselves look bad because – for a political party to tell the people of a state that your votes don't count, you were not going to seat your delegates, that is the very height of conceit, elitism, and arrogance, at least in my opinion.
And, you know, and you have to sort of think a little bit, you know, if you talk a little bit about Michigan, you know, you would certainly say it's probably a blue-collar state, I think would be a fair thing to call it. I mean, you know, it was always regarded, you know, potentially with some of the other states around it, like Ohio and the such, like it's sort of been the powerhouse of the industrial America. And, you know, you could see a lot of people feeling very offended if all of a sudden that powerhouse status, even though it's probably sometime in the past, isn't recognized, particularly for all those, you know, potentially blue-collar workers.
Well, that's very true. That part of the country has been traditionally referred to as the Rust Belt because of the high concentration of factories. Now, there are still some contests remaining, and specifically June 3rd is the big date. June 3rd, we've got New Mexico, Montana, and South Dakota. And let's also not forget that on May 27th, just days away here, is the primary for Idaho.
Which, strangely, is not binding, actually, is it, on the Democratic Party? Which is, and that's even more interesting that some primaries are binding and some primaries aren't. And it seems odd that states will make, and is that just in the state deciding it's not binding, or is that somebody else deciding that the result is binding or not binding?
That was a decision made by the people of the state by popular vote. Now, when we say non-binding, what that means is that the state delegates are free to vote their conscience whenever and however they want to. When a state primary is binding, the state delegates are obligated at a minimum to vote for the candidate who got the majority vote when they go to the convention. This is why the subsequent votes beyond the first ballot can be such a wild ride. When they go to the convention and the gavel is dropped, everybody who has to vote a certain way will do so. And it never happens that the presidential nominee is picked on the first ballot. Interestingly enough, just a little bit of trivia, when you look back, some presidents have been some presidential nominees have been selected by their party after more than 100 ballots. I mean, that's 100 tries, and you can only imagine how frustrated that must make people be.
And that must make for great TV, because I'm sure this is all televised as well, isn't it?
You know, it's televised, but I'll tell you exactly what it sounds like. Because it's just, it is such a snore, because you got somebody up on the stage with the gavel, bangs the gavel, and it's like, the chair will now represent, the chair will now allow the delegate from Alaska to speak. You know, and it goes on and on and on. And somebody's always got their nose in a procedure book. And it's agonizing. It's terrible. Now, me, personally, what I do is at the end of the evening, around 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, I'll tune in and I'll watch the recaps. Because for the first 3 days of these conventions, that procedural stuff, I would rather have a cheese grater used on me than actually watch it.
And potentially, presumably, if Florida isn't decided, if the ruling on Florida isn't decided at the 31st, presumably the first 3 days of the Democratic convention could be even more interesting.
Oh, it will be incredible, because there will be lawsuits underway at that point. The state governors for Michigan and Florida have already said that if this matter is not resolved by the time the convention starts, that they're each going to send a letter to their state's attorney general, and they're going to begin legal proceedings.
So if you take that to the nth degree, could you actually have it where the Democrats do not actually have a known candidate when it comes time for the general election because of these court cases, because of these legal battles going through?
Oh, no, that certainly won't happen. The wheels of justice in this case will turn so slowly that the court cases themselves may not actually be heard until late February of 2009. So things will move forward as they are. The one and only big shocker could be that if the superdelegates turn and choose Hillary, then that convention would erupt in pandemonium. The riots of 68 would look tame by comparison.
So hang on, let's just backtrack that a little bit, because for my benefit and then maybe for some of our listeners, if, say, for example, the votes for Michigan and for Florida aren't decided on the 31st and they're excluded from the Democratic convention, what you've said is that the two governors of those states will automatically start legal proceedings to say this is wrong. But you're saying that those court cases won't be heard until potentially February, March 2009. Now, what would happen if the difference between the candidates was potentially the state of Florida? And let's say, for example, hypothetical, let's tell all our listeners, this is hypothetical, this is Martin talking, the difference between the votes, the difference between the two delegates is 25 seats. Barack Obama wins it, he goes through to the general election, wins the general election, gets sworn in, and then sometime in, say, March or April in 2009, a Supreme Court says, hang on a minute, the votes of Florida should have counted, Hillary Clinton should have been the candidate. What happens?
Well, unfortunately, you would see a fight that would just tear this country apart. It would be almost as savage as watching Dave and Johnny fight over a donut.
I mean, you'd think it would be that serious.
It would be a constitutional crisis of epic proportions. But, thankfully, that's not going to happen. Because even if you do grant Hillary Clinton's wish and give her all of the popular vote and all of the delegates from both of those states, it only balances the scale so far. She still is slightly behind in state-level delegate counts, and it's unlikely that she would win back any of the superdelegates. So, unfortunately, in her case, even if some miracle does happen, it doesn't change the balance of power in her case. Her best option is to game the system. So she's got to go to the convention and she's got to say, well, okay, fine, you got me on superdelegates, you got me on state-level delegates, but I do have you in the popular vote. And, oh, by the way, if you don't choose me, then I'm going to turn on the waterworks, I'm going to go outside, I'm going to cry in front of the cameras, and you will be shamed.
So So I think between us we can conclude that Hillary is playing for the number two job rather than the number one job now.
Oh, absolutely. If she's not playing for number two, then she's plotting and scheming for 2012. Her best chance for success in that scenario is to hope that John McCain wins, because he'll be a one-term president. And if that doesn't work out, then she hopes that the economy is just so bad nasty that all of Barack Obama's optimism won't save him, and at the end of his 4 years, when oil trades at $250 a barrel and gasoline is $19 a gallon, that people will throw him out of office. Then she steps up to the nearest camera and says, "I'm here to announce today that my candidacy for the presidency will begin right now. I want to be your president in 2012.
But then potentially then the age issue gets thrown back in again, doesn't it?
Ah, but see, the interesting thing is the Democrats have tried to make John McCain's age an issue, and it really just hasn't played. A lot of people have looked at the man and said, you know, I want to have that much energy when I'm 71 years old. If he can do that, he can be president. Ageism in America is not the problem that it used to be, and I would dare say that by the end of the next decade, it will be, you know, if it's still one of the top 10 social issues, it'll be somewhere around number 8 or number 9.
And I've said it before, I still think one of the strengths that McCain has, you know, is his service in Vietnam, is the fact that he has, you know, served to his country, you know, other than dying for his country, you know, he has paid a very high price. He was a POW, you know, of the Vietnamese in the Viet Cong, which, you know, I think everyone would accept probably wasn't nice and wasn't pleasant. And I think actually for a lot of Americans, I think that adds a lot of credibility to the man that, you know, he fought for his country, he was held prisoner, and he's still active in his 70s, that he still wants to make a difference for the country. And I think that's actually something that will give him, in some population demographics, will actually give him a significant advantage over potentially Barack Obama.
No, absolutely. I totally agree. And if the heaven forbid, if there is another terrorist attack here in the United States between now and November, you would almost guarantee his presidency, because when we go to the polls, in addition to the aforementioned economic problems, people will have national security first and foremost in their mind.
Absolutely. And, you know, hey, and, you know, and let's face it, if you go to AboveTopSecret.com, I'm sure the most popular forum is 9/11 conspiracies. And, you know, who knows? You know, we may have just started something, or something may happen between, you know, now and the general election. And you and I will be able to say, we discussed this on one of our shows.
Oh, yes, indeed. And eventually I would like to have an ATS member come on to the Above Politics show to talk with us about the potential for what they call a false flag incident.
Well, there you have it, people. There is an invitation issued by us. You want to come on the show and talk about that one? Either you to you, either Justin or me, or post something in the show thread in the Above Top Secret ATS Mix forum. Post something. We want you on the show.
Absolutely. Now, to prove just how cosmopolitan we are, I'd like to segue into some other issues. I'm sure that there must be other threads out there on the ATS boards that have caught your interest.
There are one or two, but one of the things I did see, and this was a thread by ATS member Steve2652, and it was in the regional politics section, and it's announcing a cut in the UK of £2.7 billion in tax cuts by our Chancellor. And just to sort of put that in perspective, £2.7 billion is $5 billion. And just for information, in the UK you had three tax rates. So you had a 10% tax rate for a certain amount of your income, then you went to a 22% tax rate for another chunk of your income, and then we had the highest rate tax, which was 40%. So there were bans. So let's say, for example, I can't remember what the bans are, but maybe for the first £5,000 you paid 10% tax, and then maybe from 10,000 up to 37,000 you paid 22%, and any income above £37,000 you paid 40%. Well, government decided to scrap that. They said, no, the 10p tax rate, we're going to get rid of it all. Potentially that hit a lot of low income people who potentially weren't earning a huge amount of money. So after some pressure, the government decided that they would fine £2.7 billion and put in tax cuts to benefit the people who were most adversely affected by this. Now, the reason I wanted to raise this thread was, A, it was an interesting thread. It just goes to prove that governments, when they need to find money to help themselves, will always find the money, because the interesting thing we have in the UK is, as this show is being recorded, we do have a by-election for the UK Parliament for Crewe and Nantwich, and many people have scurrilously said that the reason this tax rebate was put through was Crewe and Nantwich is probably a Labour heartland seat, and they were potentially doing this because it would look good for the Labour Party candidate for that region. So, hey, who would expect our government to do anything sneaky like that one? The other reason I was interested in this thread was that the government couldn't find £30 million, that's about $60 million, which is probably about a tenth of this tax cut, to give the police officers of the UK a full pay increase that was agreed by an independent pay review. So on one hand, the government can find £2.7 billion as a tax rebate, but can't find £30 million to give police officers in the UK a full pay rise and backdate it. So that's what interested me in that thread. You know, and I'm sure this happens all throughout the world. Governments, strangely, will be able to cook the books, find money. And I'm sure this never happens in the US, Justin.
Well, when we come back from our next break, I'll answer your question and get ready to laugh.
Question. What does the NSA, CIA, OSI, MI6, U.S. Secret Service, NASA, the Pentagon, EPA, the U.S. House of Representatives, the U.S. Senate, FEMA, the U.S. Department of State, the United States Navy, the United States Marines, the U.S. Army, United States Air Force, the United Kingdom House of Lords and House of Commons, Buckingham Palace, Forbes Magazine, Time, The New York Post, The Wall Street Journal, CNN, NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, CNBC, to name just a small few, have in common. Answer? These plus thousands of others have registered members and constant visitors to all three sites on the Above Network LLC. AboveTopSecret.com, BelowTopSecret.com, and AbovePolitics.com. Get smart. Be part of the revolution that is being heard around the world.
So, I'm now ready, Justin. I've gone out there, I've prepared, I've got a glass of water next to me, so if I choke with laughter, I'm ready.
Okay, now, here in the States, this problem of tax cut versus law enforcement pay raise has been with us for quite some time. As a matter of fact, they've had similar problems in, if you can believe this, the Department of Homeland Security, in which they've actually cut employee salary increases so that they can have money for, get this, advertising, so that the American people will think more positively of the Department of Homeland Security.
I bet you find they went out to some advertising group or some organization, probably pitched this as an idea and said, give us $50 million, we can come up with a very clever way to increase your profile, make Americans love the Department of Homeland Security, and you can pay your employees less. I'm sure someone actually pitched that as an idea somewhere.
Ah, never mind the fact that if you had given the Department of Homeland Security employees a pay raise, they themselves would feel better about their jobs, so they'd say good things about their agency, which would be heard by their friends and passed on by word of mouth. But hey, you know, that would have made sense.
That certainly would have made absolute sense. But hey, and then that brings me on to another thread that I saw that was just in the Above Politics thread. And this was by an ATS member called K Dial One, who said government cooking the books. And this was an article from an organization in the US was saying that the US government had actually said that the cost of inflation and the cost of fuel actually dropped in April by some of their calculations, rather than the real reality of things, which, as you've quite rightly said, the cost of petroleum's going up, or crude oil is going up, hit a new high, I believe, today. The basic government, where the US government were massaging the figures to say actually cost of gasoline actually hasn't gone up as much. And it was just piqued my interest a little bit to say, another example of governments doing exactly what they want to do and massaging the figures, massaging the numbers to make them look good.
Oh, absolutely. I remember we had this conversation back during the crisis involving the Northern Rock Bank, and then we had the same conversation again after your government nationalized that bank.
They certainly did, and, you know, that's still ongoing, and it just staggers me, you know, how these people sort of play so fast and, you know, crooked. Is that, I mean, I suppose, yes, I shouldn't really be saying they're crooked, Justin. We might have the ATS lawyers on to us, but, you know, so fast and free with our money that they're quite happy to take it off us with one hand and then turn around and say, oh, but we're in a bit of trouble. I know what we can do. We can either not pay somebody, or we can forego this, or we can forego that. But here's what we can do is we can, A, find money for all the lobbyists or for all our friends. Oh, and B, just before the elections, we can say, guess what? We're all going to give you some money back, because aren't most people in the U.S. getting $600 back to sort of stimulate the economy?
Oh, yes, indeed. President Bush had the genius idea to give everybody who'd filed a tax return $600, and he was hoping that they would spend this money on various consumer goods that would provide a spike to the economy. But interestingly enough, what I've heard on all of the major news channels here is that $600 for the average person has either gone to their credit card or has gone to their guest.
And interestingly, it would be great to see the statistics here, Justin. Just how many tax returns were filed?
Approximately somewhere, or actually, I don't know the exact number, but I believe it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 130 million.
Now, is that up on the previous year?
I don't actually know. That's a statistic I don't have at hand, and if anybody does have the answer to that question, please feel free to post it in this show thread. I'll be interested to know that one myself.
And I certainly would as well, Justin, because, hey, there's another, you know, you could say, well, actually, hang on a minute, there were an extra 5 million tax returns filed. I wonder why. A little bit of conspiracy coming out there. That would be an interesting statistic. So hopefully, yes, as Justin says, someone out there, I'm sure, knows the answer to that.
The real conspiracy involved in this subsidy check fiasco is the fact that, okay, they took out a loan from China for $135 billion to give everybody, you know, a handful of ducats. But then when you factor in the administrative cost of this whole thing, it's going to cost them $305 billion. So in this particular case, the preventative measure was worse than the disease or the problem itself.
And you have to be thinking, China's thinking, hang on a minute, we give the U.S. this money and we're going to get it back from the government because they're going to pay the loan off. And guess what? Most of the people, if they don't spend it on their credit card or on their fuel tank, will go out and buy consumer electronics, which we make. So we get double bubble on the money. Someone in China must be thinking, lending the US government money so that it can give its citizens $600 each. That's a clever business model. We get money at both ends of this equation.
Oh, boy, you know, I'm no Amy Winehouse, but I do know when I'm being screwed, and this is one of the worst cases that I've seen in a long time, because as a taxpayer, when I look at the federal debt and I see what this addition of $305 billion is going to mean to that debt, and it really does make me want to vote for none of the above.
Hey, and there's been some threads on that about none of the above, but not sure I should encourage people to vote for none of the above. That'd be an interesting thing we could talk about on a later show. None of the above. I like that idea.
Say, now, speaking of a later show, tell us about what happens next week.
Well, hopefully next week we have an interview with the press officer of the British National Party. And not wanting to prejudge, but they would clearly be seen as being on the right of British politics. Typically, I think it would be fair to say they're not a mainstream party in the UK. People can certainly go and find out about them. If you put in, I believe it's British National Party into your search engine, you will find a lot of information about them. And we hopefully have their press officer, Simon Darby, who will be talking to us next week. And there has been a thread created in regional politics where a few members have already posted some questions that they'd like us to ask of the British National Party. And finally, one other thread to talk about, and I wonder if we'll get any points for mentioning our own thread or not. We really ought to. There is a thread in Above Politics called Martin Bain and Justin Case from the Source. And this is a thread where you can go and ask questions. And we will endeavor to answer them. You know, clearly, I'm going to have to say, if you ask me a question, will I vote for this candidate or that candidate? I'm not going to tell you, because that's between me and my conscience, and I don't want how I vote to influence this show in any way. But, you know, views on, you know, what we think about matters, more than happy, and we'll try and showcase some of those in later shows.
Yeah, absolutely. The important thing about this new thread is that it gives you access to us when we're not doing the Above Politics show. The rumor is true. Eventually, they are going to upgrade us to high-def widescreen podcasting. But until that happens, you can grab your keyboard, surf on over to AboveTopSecret.com, click on the Above Politics forum, and find this thread, and you can ask Martin or myself any question you like, as long as it sticks to the TNCs. Don't ask us anything that'll force us to compromise state secrets.
Nope, and we've had a couple of members. Actually, we've had one, actually, I have to be honest. Expert 11 has been on there. Not asked us a question, but just sort of talking about, you know, making sure, you know, suggesting that we sort of keep this policy of just talking about the things that are hot and important. And clearly we are talking about the US presidential elections a lot, because that is an important event, not only in the US, but across the world. Clearly, you know, whoever is the president of the United States impacts the rest of the world. So clearly, even if you're thinking, well, I'm from China, I'm from India, I'm from the UK, I'm from Ireland, I'm from South Africa, I'm from Latin America, who the US president is impacts your life in so many ways that you can't really just say, I'm not interested. You need to be interested, because still today, the person who sits in the White House is probably still the most powerful political leader on this planet.
Now, in addition to all of these political figures and people who work for political figures, we're going to be bringing you more ATS member interviews in the future. We've got half a dozen scheduled now, so we are going to have a full calendar for the rest of the year. At least that's what it looks like to me. So, yay, job security.
Absolutely. Now all we have to do is move from job security to being paid, and that would be absolutely superb.
Oh, that's going to come over time. You know, as we continue to pick up new subscribers to this podcast, we're making more and more friends all the time. And, you know, eventually, you know, Dave and Johnny are going to start looking in their rearview mirror, because what they see might be us.
Cool. I like the thought of that. Those two with startled eyes looking in the mirror. And just on that one, don't forget to check out the ATS Mix Show with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous.
Absolutely, and once you've had all of that that you can possibly stand, tune in to the BTS Mix with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock. One of the good things about podcasting is that you can't actually see us, so you won't actually know that Doc likes to show up for work in his jammies and bathrobe.
Oh, and you said you wouldn't tell anyone about that. Oh,
no, that's... I said I wouldn't say anything about the other thing that Spencer does. Doc is fair game at this point.
Okay, fair point on that one, though. But you're going to walk into every door in front of me for the next few weeks because I don't want them having any revenge on me because those guys are always in BTS's pranks, jokes forum, and that worries me.
Well, hey, on that happy note, we are out of here. I'm Justin Case.
And I'm Martin Bain, and we'll see you next time on the Above Politics Show.
Being part of the revolution is easy. Star, flag, and dig the mother. Whether you find a great topic or really enjoy one of our podcasts, you can make it even better by taking the time to show your appreciation and applause by giving the material a star, then flag, and finally a dig. This will draw attention to the thread or podcast, and by doing so, you're making a difference and improving the ATS, BTS, and Above Politics experience. So remember, when you find a great thread or podcast, star, flag, and dig the mother. Thanks for being part of the revolution from your friends at the Above Networks, LLC.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at abovepolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.